You're listening to a podcast on the Awkward Human Network. If you want to find out more about this show and all the other cool stuff that we do, visit awkwardhuman.com.
Let's talk about you.
Welcome to What's Wrong With You. Each episode, we'll ask one guest the same series of four questions.
What's wrong with me?
What's wrong with
so
me? It's scary to answer that question.
I have a lot of split ends.
The next question. Tell me about a time that you failed.
It's a loaded question.
The third one. If you could go back in time and tell yourself one thing, how real do you get with people about it?
Well, I don't tell because they think I'm a crazy person.
What would you say?
I'd say prepare everybody else.
I'd say just go in and watch.
You're gonna fuck up and then fess up and then fix
it. Great beer,
sweet beer, man.
Yeah, great beer.
For sure. Okay.
And the last question, when does that come up now? When do you think about that moment or that failure or that lesson? Who am I? I'm your host, Sarah Kleigman. Coming up on this episode of What's Wrong With You. Will Sterling is a super talented actor, writer, and producer, and he's also the man behind the podcast, The Motivation Report, wherein he supplies his listeners with really thoughtful and, you guessed it, motivating bi-weekly podcasts. When I asked him which episode of his show was his favorite, he recommended the one titled The Modern Prometheus, and I won't spoil it, but it's a radio play of epic proportions, and I highly recommend listening to it, especially before Halloween. In this episode, we made talking about death, divorce, and unemployment surprisingly cheery. Hi, Will.
Hi, Sarah.
So what's wrong with you?
I create an unnecessary shitload of amount of work for myself.
Unnecessary shitload.
I mean, like, I don't need to do this much stuff, but I'm like, but I want to do all of it. And then I say yes to other people in projects, thinking like, well, at least I'm filling my time like working this way. And like, eventually the universe is going to be like, good job. Remember all that time you put in that work? Here's $1 million and a role on Magnum PI.
Is that
reboot.
What happens? That's what happens, right? The universe is like, great job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here you go.
Karma.
So do you do that? Like, are these all projects that you're passionate about that if you had all the time in the world, you would definitely be doing all of them? Some.
Not all of them. Because sometimes with friends, they're like, hey, can you help me with this thing? And I'm like, yes. I have a problem saying yes to like almost everybody. Mm. So I'm also actively working.
Can I have like $10?
If I had $10, I'd give it
yes.
to you. But so there's things where like people are like, can you be in this sketch? Can you do this thing? Can you help me give me notes on this short script or whatever it is? And I'm like, yeah, totally. And then I'm like, fuck, I have to do all this stuff. And then it feels like you don't have time for yourself.
So maybe it's more of a problem of saying yes. Maybe that's what's wrong with you.
I guess. I need to say no more. Yeah. Yes. No.
Bad job.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a hard time saying no.
And you want to say yes because you want to, they're like your friends and you want to be there for them.
Yeah. And I want to, like I said, kind of put that good energy out in the universe thinking it will come back to me. But
the universe,
at the same time, I don't want to do all of these things. And then the things I really want to do, I don't have a ton of time for.
I think I do that too.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I'll be fucking exhausted. Like, it'll be an insane week. And mm-hmm. someone will ask me if I want to like go to a dinner event.
Right.
That they have no personal, they have very little personal like connection to.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if I said yes, even if it was like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what was going on or what was going to be going on in my life at the time. If I said yes, I'm like, oh, I can't. I have to go to this dinner. Yeah. In reality, like if I was like, hey, I have to go work on my art form for an hour instead of eating tapas with you and 20 people, I don't know. They'd probably be like, that's fine. I get it. I mean, and that's just sort of the social side of it. But
yes.
I think creatively, I mean, I don't think I have as many people asking me to do things as you do, which is good.
Well, good thing you said that. I have a lot of work that needs to be done. It's my personal stuff, but I don't have time for it. So I need you to do it so I can do the things that I've obligated myself to for other people.
Mm,
are you willing to do that?
That's a good deal.
Okay.
That's a good deal.
Yeah. And produce all the podcasts and
basically
pretend to be me. Host my show.
I can say host my show again.
Host my show.
Host my show. Does that sound like you?
Yeah, kind of.
I'm close. Wow. So has that always been something you've done?
Yes.
Always?
From a young age, I've put myself in a caretaker position. And I 100%, like I've been going to therapy for 9-ish months now to kind of get my life figured out and some personal things that I've been going through. And that was a big part of why you get taken advantage of. And not necessarily that your friends are treating you like shit. They're just like, oh, he'll do it.
Right.
And then you get spread thin and you don't want to disappoint people. And my mom passed away when I was 15, when I was very young. And so like I was in a caretaker position with her from that age. And then that just set the pattern for the rest of my life. It made me emotionally grow up at a young age to process this. And then I was just like, well, all my friends need this perspective and help and like being able to have somebody who can take care of them and always be there for them to rely on. And like I wanted to, and I grew up in like a religious household too. And I was like, that's the Jesus example. Like, yeah, they ask you to go a mile, you go 2 miles. And it's like, but Jesus never talked about the part where you're like, I'm going to put your shit down and turn around. It's been 5 miles. This is enough. You know what I mean?
You've gone far enough.
Yeah. I only have so many cheeks. And so that is definitely where that comes from. And yeah.
It's funny because I think as I've gotten older, the idea that I am responsible for my own happiness and everyone else is responsible for their own happiness has been kind of like hard to grasp.
Yeah, very difficult.
Because you think, and it sort of sounds like you're kind of similar to me in this way, where you're like, all right, well, I behave the way I want other people to behave. You know, I treat other people how I want to be treated. Exactly. Yeah. So theoretically,
right.
If that part was true, if everyone was like treating thy neighbor, whatever,
yeah.
then it'd be great.
Right.
However, not the case.
No.
So if everyone was sort of like, you know, everyone else was going as hard at helping you or helping everyone else,
right.
then I mean, you know,
yeah.
self-fulfilling circle.
It is. And then I'll go through little bouts of being like feeling really alone, even though I know that I'm surrounded by, and I'm a level-headed person, but still you go through little, everybody goes through little cycles of like, you know, depression and little moments. And I'm like, I'm alone. And my family and friends are like, but you have so many friends. I'm like, yeah, but I just can't shake the fact that I feel like I've done so much and received so little in return.
Right. But then you don't want to.
But I put myself in that position. Right. Yeah.
And at the same time, you're like, but that's not really what's important.
Right. It's about giving.
Right.
But as a culture, we teach both things. Like on my show, I talk a lot about how human beings are just walking, talking contradictions. Like that's what we are. And that's fine.
Yeah.
Everybody's guilty of it. And so we always push like, buy, buy, buy. Don't you need all this stuff? Make your life better. And then it's like, you need to remember the purpose of Christmas is giving. You know, like life is not about receiving, it's about giving. And it's like, it can't be both of those things.
No,
you do have to find the ebb and flow.
And in a different episode with Heather Thompson, a comedian, we talked about how like you could get opposing idioms for like all of the, like this,
right.
like two, I couldn't even think of one.
Bird in the hand is the two in the bush or whatever.
Or it's like the early bird gets the worm, but then there's also like something about sleeping well. Like there's all of these different, so which at the end of the day, it's like, all right, so you just have to sort of, you just have to check your internal compass.
Yeah. You got to check yourself before you wreck yourself.
I feel like someone else said that before.
I don't think so. I think that's true at all.
so then has that translated to other things, other areas of your life?
Yes.
Is this a good transition?
This is a great transition.
To talk about your failure?
My failure.
Well,
yeah.
Tell me about a time that you failed.
I went over a year, let's see, almost a year and 2 months without booking a single acting job, which when you dream of this being the thing that you do and working in the entertainment industry and the craft of acting, that's not a great,
not a great thing to have. So for people who are like really outside of that world, as an actor, you're going on, you even today, we had to reschedule part
two
of today.
And yeah, a callback. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Which is rare that
it's
like
great.
Sometimes there's a bunch of stuff in one day and it blows up the day before.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you go a couple of weeks without even any auditions or sometimes just 1 week. It's all over the place.
All over the place. And I think, I don't know, I feel like actors are much, well, I don't know how they internalize it. I'll ask you.
Yeah.
Much better at sort of accepting failure?
Some
or
of
like
them
more
are.
Like you're maybe you're just more used to it?
Yeah, 75%, I say this like jokingly, but it's kind of true. 75% of every day of my life is rejection.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not, and if you look at it and you frame it that way, it's like, well, if I'm not getting an audition, I'm being pushed out. You know, if I'm not getting the callback, I'm being weeded out. If I'm not booking the job, I'm being weeded out. So when it happens consistently for over a year, you're like, oh good, so nobody wants me, you know, or I'm just not right for any of these things.
I think it's that. I think it's the same problem with like people who are out of a job and are looking for a job.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's not difficult to find any old job.
Right.
I mean, God, you could respond to any Craigslist ad you want.
Sure.
Show
yeah.
up at it, you know.
Right.
You should be, you could be acting
at
anything
you want. You have boxes? I could do that for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And you could do like, but especially in Los Angeles, though, there's so many like random, I mean, of varying quality, yeah. but like random acting gigs and stuff like that. And when people are looking for jobs or for work, you know, there's always a bunch of different random jobs available. I think the difficult thing is finding something you like or finding something you love or finding something you're right for.
Yeah.
And, but going a year without fitting into something.
Yeah.
And what else was happening in your life at that time?
I was in the process of getting divorced.
Sure. Great
time.
That
was a big thing. Yeah. Yeah. So again, we talked about the universe. It was like, well, maybe this is the universe like telling me like, it's cool. We're taking this year off so you can like go to therapy and handle all your stuff and figure your shit out. That's one way to look at it. Two, with acting, also there's, and I'm not saying like people in other jobs don't have to deal with this, but there's all the other layers of questions. Am I not attractive enough? So you're thinking about all the ways that you fail, and you're also thinking like in the day to day, like how does the world look at me? Like am I a
monster?
Because
you have to be thinking about that. Like that's the other thing too that I think is so interesting about actor brains is you have to think about that, and it's not like a shallow, you know, it's none of that.
Yeah.
It's because the job you do requires
it.
Right. And it requires you to sort of be aware of how other people respond to
how you look.
Yeah.
Yeah. So dealing with the divorce and all that kind of stuff in the year was just, there's no question that all the things that went on during that period of time brought that up to like a boiling point. So then also stretching myself thin, still wanting to work on my own projects and projects with friends and trying to mentally and emotionally figure out whether or not I wanted to stay in this long-term relationship. Trying to figure out why I was failing so consistently.
At least you're being consistent.
Yeah. At least I can. If not, my grandpa, I went fishing with my grandpa one time when I was a little kid and we sat in the fucking hot ass sun all day in this boat and had like a bologna sandwich. It was terrible. And we didn't catch a single fish.
Nice detail.
Yeah. And not one fish. It was like a competition. The person who catches the biggest fish. We didn't catch one fish. We're driving home and like, I'm just like so mad. I'm like, this is such a fucking waste. And he goes, well, if it wasn't for bad luck, we wouldn't have had any luck at all. And I was like, so not the time to hear that. But like,
no, I'd be so mad. If there's like a line of being supportive and then there's a line of like, no, I need you to validate that. Just validate that this sucks. Like, don't cheer me up right now.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the thing too, is that like as an actor, you also have to be like, well, maybe you're just not right. Like, you know, I'd go in for all these auditions.
That's very true.
And it is very true. But the way that the business frames it for actors is different than the way the natural human emotion works, which is why so many people get fucked up in their head who are actors. Because your body says like, let's look for silver linings. Let's try to find ways to frame this to be healthy. If you have good influence, I suppose you could, you know, go down a dark hole. And the industry says like, well, what are you doing wrong? Like you should be getting this many callbacks. You should be getting this many bookings. Like if you're going, like here's the ratio of how much you're going out. This is the ratio of how much you probably should be booking. So you should be taking more classes. You should be spending more money. Maybe you need more headshots. Maybe you need new headshots.
So that year that you didn't land anything, were you still hustling in all those other areas?
Like taking classes and stuff?
Yeah. Like
no.
All that. No.
Because I was mad.
You were mad.
Yeah. Because I was dealing with a lot of stuff in my life. And I was dealing with the fact that I think to a certain level, you have to have a healthy amount of ego to stick around in this industry.
Yeah.
You can't be like, oh, I'm from Akron, Ohio, but if I don't make it in 4 years, I go back. It's like, you should go back now.
It's like a confident self-awareness.
Yeah.
And also, if you're from Akron, just go home.
I mean, that's where my mom was born. So that's the one that I just always latch on to.
Is it Akron?
Like a random town. Yeah. I don't know. I've never been there. If you're from Akron and you're listening, I'm sure it's beautiful.
We're really sorry.
Yeah. Really, really sorry.
It's not. I've been to Toledo.
Okay.
Which looks how it sounds. That was pretty. Anyways, back to your story.
When I was thinking about what we would talk about, I was like,
can we talk more about the divorce thing?
Yeah. D-I-V-O-R-C-E. Yes. Yeah. That's a country song. Yeah.
What was that?
The country song D-I-V-O-R-C-E.
I don't know about this.
That way their kid doesn't understand what they're talking about. So they spell it out.
Oh, that's really sad.
Like when you sing and take your dog for W-A-L-K.
Oh, yeah. I had a friend whose daughter was going to her first day of kindergarten this year. And they did that thing with the picture.
Oh, yeah.
Where they're like holding it and says like, first day of kindergarten.
Right.
But underneath it says like, AKA the last year I won't be able to fucking read these signs. I'm like, yes.
Yep.
Yeah. So back to divorce.
Yeah.
you know, Elizabeth's episode, we also talked about her divorce, but that mm-hmm. was very, very different.
Yeah.
Hers was, she had signed on to that life for 30 years.
She'd been in a marriage for 30 years.
Like three kids, whole thing, white picket fence, like all that.
Yeah.
There's much more to the story.
Of course.
Episode number two.
Okay.
but hers was mostly an identity thing for her.
Yeah.
It was, she realized that if she stayed in the marriage she was in, the life she was in, she wouldn't be able to accomplish the things she wanted to accomplish creatively.
Mm-hmm. I feel the same way.
Do you?
But I'm sure the specifics of our personalities is what differentiates those experiences. You
know
what I mean?
Well, and also yours is like young love, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you were high school sweethearts.
Yeah, I've known her since I was 10 years old. So our relationship, dating plus marriage, lasted 12 years, but we were married for 7. So it's still a good chunk of time. And we got together at, she was 16, I was 17, and then split up at 28, 29. So that whole adult period where you're like, this is where you learn most of your shit.
Yeah.
Didn't have that.
Right.
So I think I'm an emotionally adult person. Mm. But now I'm like, I kind of want to just like go out and party and meet girls.
Yeah.
Because I've never done that.
I'm great at breakups. And that's, there's like this arc of healing, yeah. I think. But it's like, you're like bummed and down on yourself. And like the idea of like doing any of that is like, blech.
Mm-hmm.
And then you like go out one night.
Right.
Sure. Yeah. I don't even, you can buy me a drink. And then you're like, oh, I feel great.
Yeah.
And like, turns out like the world is like into me. And right. I think getting that sort of, especially when you're coming out of a marriage.
Yes.
That's a great place to be in.
Yeah. And I did a lot of self-work to make sure that this was the wise decision. Mm. Because when you're in that thing for so long and you do feel like until death do us part is like a real thing. Mm. And using the word failure too, like a lot of people refer to divorce as a failed marriage.
Right.
And she and I, it was a mutual decision. So we still chat. Like I called her the other day for her birthday. We're still on friendly terms and I think can build a legitimate friendship.
How long ago was that?
That we split up?
Yeah.
It was at the end of May.
So we're less than a year away.
Yeah. But the changes happened very quickly because we both realized that we were growing apart for like 2-3 years. Mm. And both kind of emotionally living like single lives for a good year to 2 years. Not that we were running around on each other. That was never something that happened. But we were just kind of like focused on what we were doing independently of each other. Mm. And then would like kind of come back together and be like, what's wrong with us? You know what I mean? Like, how come it's not working? And so I went to therapy to figure out my feelings. And we started having really open honest adult conversations. Mm. You can tell I've had this conversation many times ago. And just realized that if we stayed together, we would resent and hate each other. But if we let each other go, we can love each other in a new way in the future.
Do you feel like that's real? Like, do you feel like you're going to like, and we'll be friends and we'll... I guess you might not have too much to compare it to considering like you don't,
right.
This is your first like long-term breakup. So it's not like you can be like, every time I have a long-term breakup, this is what I do. So I'm sure you're still figuring it out.
Right.
But I've always thought when people tell me about, you know, themselves going through breakups and mm-hmm. obviously it's different for everyone. I feel like there always ends up being a point where they first sort of try and be friends.
Yeah.
And then there comes a point when you're like, you know what, I need 100% of my life without you 100%.
Right.
And I need to like establish that.
Right.
And then maybe eventually like tomorrow I'm getting coffee with an ex who was, I mean, we met in film school mm-hmm. and we were friends for years, probably like almost 10 years now.
Wow.
We're together almost 2 years, live together, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And we're getting coffee, but it's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been like years.
Okay.
And even then, like, I feel like I'm of the belief that you never 100% fall out of love with someone.
Correct. You, yeah.
Yeah. No, that was.
Jump in on you because I used to be of the belief, I think coming from my background, which was this like religious, like, true love kind of thing. Like you won true love. I did believe that for a long time.
You did.
Yeah. And that's what keeps you with somebody. I think sometimes that I was like, oh, this is the one person. This is my soulmate. And then I started to question that notion a couple years ago. And you start to think, and then I start to focus on what love means and your unique loving relationships with your friends and your family and anybody, and how love is so multifaceted that I don't believe that anymore. I don't believe that there's such a thing as soulmates you can find. Like my mom passed away. My dad got remarried. Who am I to be like, listen, you're the second best. I just want you to know it. You know what I mean? Like, you can't know. It doesn't work that way.
So there's this poem that I'm going to totally butcher, but really I'll just sort of cover the concept. It was that like when someone is born,
mm-hmm.
their like soul breaks into a bunch of different pieces.
Right.
And each of those pieces go into someone else.
Hmm.
So the idea is that it's not that you have this one person,
yeah,
but that you, and personally, like, I don't believe that, like, there was a little heart explosion and little, like, sparkly thingies from,
well,
my,
what do you
soul.
Think the Big Bang was?
It's just a bunch of souls exploding, just trying to connect.
That's what Scientology says, a volcano of souls, right?
A volcano of souls?
I don't know. It's like a mecha volcano.
Is that in Scientology?
That's the sci-fi thing. It's weird. And the souls go out of this volcano. That's a rabbit
hole.
We're
not talking about soul volcanoes.
No, we're not.
Yeah. But the,
to your point,
I think it's the same idea that people say, like, you know, when people come into your life to teach you something,
yes,
or they come into your life for, like, a certain reason.
It's a lesson, yeah.
So you're like, I don't believe in Santa Claus moment.
Mm-hmm.
That happened before you were like, oh, we're gonna break up.
Way before. Yeah, like 2 years probably or so.
And when you had the realization where you're like, I wonder if that means, like,
no, because, well, yes, a little bit. But energy wise, I kind of felt that we were wondering the same thing. But for the longest time, I was like, well, I'm a person of integrity, so I'm not going to cheat on my spouse. I'm not going to run around. I'm not going to try to, like, even, like, really date other people, like that, like behind the back stuff. Like, I just can't do.
Yeah.
Because I never want that to come back to me. You know what I mean? Also with my show, like, I try to put myself in a position of motivating other people. But if it ever came out, that's why I had a whole episode about this part of my life, because I didn't want to go like 9 months and then have the audience be like, you didn't tell us that you got divorced. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, and here this whole time we've been like, oh, he's got all his shit figured out. And the whole point is like, no, I don't.
You did a whole episode on your divorce?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. I wrote like a long thing so I could kind of read it out as a script and say everything the way that I wanted to say it.
Right.
And that way I could put it out there, because to me, to be a motivator is to be in the thick of it with everybody else.
Yeah.
I'm not on the pedestal. I'm not on the stage. You know, I'm not Tony Robbins with a headset and like shouting fuck at everybody, which like is hilarious.
It'd be very fun if that was the case right now.
I do swear on my show and I changed my tone because that's authentically who I am. And I was like, I should just be the beer drinking cocktail serving every once in a while swearing motivational speaker. I like it.
Yeah.
And it was important to address it and not hide behind it. But in my own relationship, I tried to make the relationship work as long as I possibly could. Mm. And went to therapy as sort of the last avenue to make sure that I wasn't crazy for feeling the way that I was.
Yeah. What we talked about being like, you know, what's wrong with you, mm-hmm, where you give so much of yourself, I think some of that is likely,
yeah,
in the story of how the breakup, you know, went.
Mm-hmm.
But when does that mentality come up now besides every second of every day?
Well, especially during that time, like when I was unhappy in my relationship, I would intentionally fill my time with a lot of stuff to keep myself distracted.
Mm.
So I started taking dance classes and performing.
What kind
with
of dance?
Dance group, hip hop.
You, what?
Fun. Yeah.
Are there videos of you doing hip hop dancing?
Yeah, little short videos on Instagram.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So I was just picking up new things that I was like, oh, it's also a skill to have as an actor or a performer.
Yeah.
And so the unhappiness in a relationship meant that I was just filling that hole with either my own projects, writing or short filmmaking, or obligations to other people in a way to do as much as I could to sort of not be at home that much, because I was unhappy spending a bunch of time with the person that I was with at that time.
Mm.
And so when you're doubling this quote unquote failed relationship, which is not how I term it, on top of the failure of not working for over a year, and you're just like pumping all of your time and energy into doing other things for other people, you're not giving yourself enough time to sort of figure out what's wrong with you.
Yeah.
And that
emphasis,
was where,
yeah. Yeah,
where therapy came in hand, because I was like always encouraging other people to go. And to a certain degree, like I'm a self-aware person, so I would kind of try to do self-therapy as much as I could. But I had a very specific incident that happened where I was like, whoa, go. Like, get in now, because I was just like, like freaked out.
Can you talk about
that? Yeah, I just met somebody that I was became infatuated with. You know what I mean? And had no, was again, not going to run around behind my spouse's back, but knew that it was illogical and projecting, that I was projecting things that I wasn't getting in my current relationship onto someone who's, for all intents and purposes, a perfect stranger. Mm. Even though we worked together in a small capacity, I barely knew this person.
Mm.
But you start imagining all these fictitious realities with them. And I was like, oh, this is psychotic. Like, I should go now. So I went, you know, and talked through it and processed it pretty quickly.
And found out that that is like a totally normal thing to be. Yeah.
Everybody does it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and so it's fun too, because like, hopefully people who listen to my show, like, well, I'll plug this on there and they can come listen to this,
yeah,
because it's always different sides of me. And being vulnerable, I've always been that person where it's like, I probably overshare, but I'm always like quicker to be vulnerable than to be guarded, because I find that if I'm open with people, they're more oftentimes going to be open with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe that shamelessly showing your insecurities and your vulnerabilities make you a more likable person. Mm-hmm. Living honestly inspires right. other people to live honestly.
Absolutely.
And I joked with a friend about the oversharing thing.
Yeah.
And they were like, never change. And I was like, careful what you wish for.
Stay golden, pony boy. Yeah.
exactly.
Yeah.
So is there anything else that you, given the things that you've talked about and mm-hmm. things that you've mentioned, that you feel like you want to say in order to either like tie them together or to like reiterate or to yeah. make sure that like, despite saying this, people should take home this?
Right. Yes. Because everything is connected, which is a term that I got from my therapist, but it's true. Everybody's living out a script that was written for them by other people and influences. You're born, ideally, some people don't believe this, but I kind of do, as like a blank slate. Like a baby, it's a baby. Like what? But from day one, you have nothing but influence. You know, it's not possible to be without influence. So as you grow up, you just become an amalgamation of your influences, and you have this script that's written for you, and the decisions that you make are based upon what you know and your sort of learned behavior and the way that you've been trained. And all of that comes to a head, especially like in your 20s and 30s when these transition periods happen. And like 27 to 32, I guess I didn't know this until therapy, that like that's a big transition period for people. And so I have all of these things that happen, especially losing my mom at a young age, putting myself into a caretaker position, getting into a long-term relationship with somebody who sort of needed me to fill that role, and I needed someone to need me, extending that as long as I possibly could for 12 years, choosing a profession or an aspiration of acting where I get to authentically pretend to be other people and escape and live in this thing. And you don't get to achieve the things that you want to achieve creatively if you're tied to a script that's holding you back. Mm-hmm. So it is important to look at quote unquote what's wrong with you or where you've failed.
Can you say that again?
It's important, yeah, to look at it and break it down and know that you have the ability to rewrite your own script. You don't have to keep making these decisions and these mistakes. Sometimes it's out of our control, which is unfortunate, like victims of abuse or things like that that happen from childhood or even much later. You don't ask for those things to happen. You don't ask, especially like in America, like if you're anybody that's other like a straight white person, you don't ask to be born your orientation, whatever it is, you just are. But your behavior can be changed if you're willing to be self-aware and know that there is technically nothing wrong with you.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point of therapy. Like yeah. I did a whole episode about it. People think like, oh, you're in therapy? What's wrong? It's like, no nothing.
Therapy's
I'm the healthiest I've ever been.
I mean, I've been in almost weekly therapy for almost like 10 years now.
Okay. It's just nice to have an unbiased third party to tell all your shit to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when it, like nothing's going wrong or I have nothing to talk about, like I'll read her things I'm working on.
Right.
Just fucking hang out. No. Right. I also believe too that like the first, depending on how regularly you're going, but like the first like month or two mm-hmm. of therapy is just like starting to understand what therapy is.
Yes, totally.
Which is like much different.
Right.
Depending on the therapist.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I failed at therapy one time. I went to this when I was like trying to get a new therapist.
Okay.
She was like very, I don't remember what the style is, but it's very like, you will experience these emotions in the room.
Right.
And we will like, so she would like pick at something. And if she thought that I was like emotionally upset by something, she would try and like fan that flame. It was like, she would try and get me to fucking cry.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
it's like
and
a
then
student
she would,
film director.
Yeah.
I'm all about the crying scene. It's like, that doesn't mean you're a good actor just because you can fucking cry on
exactly.
camera.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you. It doesn't mean you're a good therapist for making everyone cry. Maybe
right.
that's actually the opposite.
Yeah.
And then she asked me, she's like, how are you feeling right now? And I'm like, I would be like, I'm not happy. And she's like, that's not an emotion. And I'm like, all right. I'm feeling like she's like physically in your body. And I'm like, I don't like a little queasy. She's like, no. And like, no matter what I said, she's like, those aren't
wrong.
Emotions. And I'm like, what are emotions? And I was like, I don't even know what emotions
am I a person?
Right.
And your robot body just shut down and you were like, oh.
So that being said, if you go to a therapist that makes feel a little weird, fucking
leave.
Change it up.
People stay with bad therapists. I feel like I talked about therapy more than anything in this episode. But
good. That's kind of what the show is. That's why it's a fucking couch.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Because it's like, it is all connected. So me not working for over a year, like sure, maybe universe stuff. But at the same time, like I'm all of my having a problem saying yes to everybody comes to a head where I said yes to a relationship that I was in for a long time when I should have said no. Mm. And I said yes to things that filled my time that distracted from me and my auditions. Like maybe I wasn't giving 110%. Maybe I was only going in with like 65-75%. Mm-hmm. And maybe I thought I was doing a good job, but it was showing that the things that were bogging me down throughout that year were coming up in the craft, mm-hmm. so to speak. And if you can recognize, yeah, what's wrong with you, you realize nothing's wrong.
Exactly.
You can move past it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
Working out all the things.
Yep.
Please.
How can I make you cry? I notice your coffee cup has a lot of numbers on it. Are you a very needy person?
Want to know my coffee order? Half almond milk, half water, matcha latte, easy on the matcha.
Now, why easy on the matcha?
I think. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Please like fuck up in a tangible way.
Mm-hmm.
And then tell that story as well.
I'm sure I have. I fell out of trees all the time as a kid.
What?
Yeah.
We could have spent the last half an hour talking about how you fall out of trees.
Fall out of trees.
It's a great visual.
Happened multiple times.
All right, well, go fall out of trees. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Find out more about today's guest or leave me a message at whatswrongwithyoupodcast.com. If you like the show, please share it with a friend or five and leave us a review on iTunes or Google Play. Thanks for listening.